About 10 months ago, I started doing some narration for a paranormal investigation show on YouTube called 605 Paranormal Society. The number 605 is the area code for South Dakota, which is where this team is based. Running through South Dakota is something called Spook Road, and that happened to be the subject of the narration for the first video I did for 605 Paranormal. Now, this group had some kind of encounter recently that made them all have to take a break for a while, and I was finally able to get them to come on and talk about what happened. I thought it was very interesting that this story ended up coming back around to Spook Road. So, because Spook Road gets mentioned a few times in this, and I want you to know what they're talking about when they bring it up, I guess let's start by playing the opening narration I did for that first episode a while back. Here it is. Just east of Sioux Falls, South Dakota, is a peaceful and friendly suburb known as Brandon. This vastly growing suburb is known for its amazing school system and pioneer history. However, it's also hiding a terrifying secret known to the locals in the area as Spook Road. In the daytime, this stretch of 264th Street may look serene, but at night, it becomes one of the most terrifying places in South Dakota. There may be haunted folklores connected to the small stretch of road. Some of them include crossing 5 bridges going out, but only 4 bridges coming back. Bodies hanging from trees, stemming back to when lynching was a practice in the area. Shadow figures spotted on bridges where people supposedly committed suicide. The feeling of being watched from all directions. A haunted cemetery with a desecrated, unmarked grave, and even reports of dark occult practices. Is this small stretch of road truly haunted? Or is it just a spooky road? That is for you, and you alone, to decide. Now, because this is a little bit of a longer episode than usual, we're not doing a separate intro story. You already know what Spook Road is, and the guys from 605 Paranormal Society are going to tell you about how they got together, and then they're going to tell you about this thing that happened recently. So go ahead and find yourself a nice dark space, and let yourself get pulled into the story. And please, if you think of a story of your own, get in touch, tell me about it. After all, that's why I'm here. I'm Albie Robles, and I want you to scare me.
My interest in the paranormal has gone back quite a while, you know, going back to watching TV shows back when I was a kid and just kind of watching different various, experiences. And, you know, that's fun when you're sitting down watching it, but then you kind of have that first experience that kind of changes your life a little bit. And mine came when I was in Arizona. We had gone to an old part of town called Jerome. You've probably seen Jerome featured on like Ghost Hunters before. It's been on Ghost Adventures. So it's a pretty famous spot. It's an old mining town, and you just get a different vibe when you're there. You feel like the area has just got this kind of, I don't know, this kind of like an aura or this cloud over it that's just different. And you go into buildings and you get this kind of empathy where you feel like things happen there. You just can't really explain it. There's a lot of history there. And we kind of snuck into an abandoned school that used to be the old Mingus Union High School. And we kind of started doing what most kids do at that age. You know, you explore and you want to find out if these things really are haunted and stuff like that. And we got in there and kind of experienced something that changed me and a few friends, that kind of made me question things in life, whether or not if there's actually ghosts out there or spirits, because, you know, we had a personal encounter with something that we all couldn't explain. You know, it was something that was very intense. I had literally something whisper into my ear to get out. And when I turned around, there was nothing there and didn't understand what it was or what exactly was happening, but it was enough to terrify pretty much everybody in our group. And that's kind of where it started. And then it just opens up your eyes to the idea of it, I guess. And then you just start to be more aware and your third eye opens and you're just believe that these kind of things can't happen. So it's just not as much of a, I guess, as a folklore anymore. It becomes a reality. Not everything is meant to be bad. So like I always tell people, if you say you heard something that said, get out, everybody's first reaction is to say, oh my God, that was a demonic spirit. Everybody, because of social media and TV shows and movies, everybody wants everything to be so evil and demonic, and because that's going to lead to more views and it'd be scarier and stuff like that. But if you talk to the experts in the field and do it for the right reason, they'll be the first one to tell you that not everything is demonic. It's very rare in most hauntings and in most cases that anything is demonic. There's a difference between demonic and aggressive and, you know, malicious spirits that are just angry spirits that don't want you there. And deciphering between those two things can be very hard. I always say it like this, Albie. If I walked into your house right now and you didn't know me at all, you didn't know any of us, and we walked into your house and we started using your eating your food, sleeping in your bed, trashing your house, yelling, making noise, what would be the first reaction you would say? The first two words you'd say out of your mouth? Get out. Does that mean that you're a bad person and that you're an evil person? No, it just means this is my territory. This is my home. This is my sanctuary. Why are you here? You're impeding into my space. I want you out. Get out. You can't always just go to the extreme and assume that because that happens, that it's demonic. And I think where mistakes are made is people then assume that and then they go into an aggressive state, right? And they're like, well, you don't tell me to get out. You show yourself. And it just makes matters worse. Instead of trying to clarify what exactly is happening, and maybe this is just an old spirit that does not want to let go. And so I always said it to you guys. I was like, imagine us sitting here at a table, me, all of us, and Albie, and all of a sudden we hear somebody going, hello? Hello? Can you hear my voice? Hello? If you're there, can you make a noise? We would all be looking up and going, what in the heck? Hello? Hello? And what do we usually catch on spirit boxes? Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Like it's almost like that acknowledgement of like, hello? Can you hear my voice? Yes, I can hear you. We get those kind of quick.
Yeah.
But imagine what it would feel like for us. We'd be like, what in the world is going on right now? Mm. How can we explain this? So just, you have to be empathetic to what did the spirit, like, is it the first time they're being interacted like this? They have no idea what's going on. What is going on right now? You have to take all those things into consideration in the science and understanding how this spirit world, there's no real true right or wrong way. And anybody that tries to tell anybody via podcast or TV that they know exactly how it works, don't trust those people with anything because nobody knows how it works. It's all assumption. It's all based on your beliefs, yeah, and your opinions. And it's not up for me to make you believe one way or anybody else. Take all that into consideration, you know, when you think about all this stuff.
Yeah.
How about you guys? Joshua's got a cool story, how yeah. he started.
Well, I grew up loving just all the spooky, scary stuff, you know, I grew up with Goosebumps, Legend of Sleepy Hollow.
Yeah.
With, you know, I grew up loving the Disney villains, especially, you know, all that stuff. Eventually, when I got a little older, was around the time when Ghost Hunters and Ghost Adventures were starting on TV, and I was like really into that. And I was like, oh, I kind of want to be a ghost hunter. And like, I didn't know, at that time, there was not really any equipment you could buy because it was all new stuff. It was stuff that you couldn't really go look up. You could just watch on TV and kind of just hear what they were saying, see what they were doing. And about the time I got into high school, one of my teachers brought to my attention, because he knew that I was really into that stuff, that there were a couple other kids at school who were looking to get into being professional ghost hunters. And there were stories about the school going back years and years about it being haunted, about janitors seeing things that others hadn't. Some of them apparently had quit because of it, because it was just too much for them to handle about seeing stuff and hearing stuff and experiencing things. And so we came up with a time, we literally met with a principal too about having an actual investigation happen. It was me, Colin, you might know Colin Browen from Paranormal Files on yeah. YouTube.
He's from our home state, so yeah. If you guys watch YouTube, he's a big-time paranormal investigator yeah. out of Sioux Falls.
And Nick, and we went down there with the Statesman, which is our high school's newspaper, essentially. And we took a couple nights and investigated the school, and we had a lot of crazy stuff happen. And you can go watch that very first episode, which is on the Paranormal Files. That was a few years ago. It was Lincoln High School. We had crazy stuff happen. We heard a piano playing by itself in the auditorium. We heard footsteps when we were in the basement. These giant rooms down in the basement. You can't even see the other side when it's dark. It's just an abyss. We heard a literal voice from the end of one of these rooms tell us, I am here. It literally just sounded like someone was at the end of the hallway, but we would go down there and no one was there. And it was a little bit after that where I was going, still watching the shows, but just watching the shows wasn't the same. Having experienced those things, I remember seeing a figure down in those basements too, because at one point, Nick, Colin, and I got separated for whatever reason. We were going to different corners of the room, and I ended up by this, it looked like some sort of fuse box, but there was a light on it. So it was just a little bit of light, and all of a sudden, at one point, I felt like there was something circling me. And I turn after like my third rotation, and there's probably 5 or so feet in front of me, this figure looking at me. And it's like this figure in this tan trench coat and almost like a newsies hat, if you know what I'm talking about. And there was no face. It was just no face at all. And just looking at me, I remember falling back, looking back up, and it's gone. It's just a dark room. And like, I remember like Nick or someone coming up to me like, are you all right? And I would go, yeah, I just literally saw something. I don't know what it was. And I tried to describe it. And I was like, do you guys see it? And they're like, no, we don't know what you're talking about.
If you look it up and search it online, Lincoln High School is one of the scariest and most haunted high schools in America. And which is crazy.
When I met Jonathan, we were talking about it with all of us right before the pandemic started about stuff like what we could do. Could we go investigate places? And then we decided, you know, right when things were starting to let up, when we were getting back into work, that on our off days, we could literally just go out and do that. Go find places, because there were places, plenty of places around where we live that had things going on that people were, you know, like Spook Road, like, oh, these spooky
South
stories.
Dakota's yep. scariest road, which is yep. literally like 15 minutes from my house.
Yeah, so we just started going to these places, investigating, having experiences, and then fully realizing that absolutely the stuff is real. It's not just our minds playing tricks on us. It's not just us wanting to tell ghost stories in the dark. It's as real as you and me. It's something that...
Tangible.
Even if you can't see it, it's there.
Honestly, with me, I kind of the same thing. I was growing up, my older brother would be watching like Ghost Adventures, Ghost Hunters, that kind of stuff. I'd watch it with him. It was always kind of interesting to me, but then kind of high school started. I didn't really focus on that. I had classes, all that stuff that I was focused on. Well, then after starting at Conquer, kind of started experiencing weird stuff happening there.
Yeah.
Through there, kind of just didn't really think much about it, kind of tampered around there a little bit at Conquer, and then all of a sudden we're just like, hey guys, what if we went up to Spook Road? And then there starts our journey.
Oh yeah, that was a bad one.
I think we all started a lot the same. I grew up with my dad watching Ghost Adventures, and we'd sit on the couch for hours trying to just sit there and kind of debunk it, you know? Like, but there's some things, you know, we couldn't explain, you know? Like, we could have been like,
yeah,
I could have done this. No, there's yeah. some things you just couldn't.
100%.
You look at it and you're just like, I couldn't tell you. And then my grandma had a really old house, and you know, always the cliches happen. You know, something rolls across the floor that was stationary a minute ago. The door creaks open,
yeah,
and that kind of stuff. So I kept it in the back of my mind that there's definitely could be something out there, but you know, it's never really a big thought of, I want to go find it.
When I was growing up, I actually never really watched Ghost Adventures at all.
Yeah.
What I was really big into, probably starting in sixth grade, was horror movies in general. I loved thrillers. I just loved the excitement of getting scared. And so when this opportunity was presented, it was something that I actually couldn't comprehend, right? And
you didn't get into it for the same reason that we got into it.
I was like, it's nothing like the movies.
Yeah, you wanted to just get scared.
What intrigued me was trying to find out what it was actually like.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know like The Conjuring is definitely my favorite horror movie. I love that aspect of things. I love Adam and Lorraine Warren, what they did to help people. That's basically what I wanted to get into, was just helping people, dead or alive, in general, and just trying to figure out the right path to go down for that stuff.
It's kind of funny how this all happened. So I own an escape room here in Sioux Falls. And so basically when we started this whole thing, I don't know exactly how to explain it other than the fact that we acquired some World War II items that are from Russia, from old Russian World War II medical bag, I think was what we found out. Mm-hmm. We did some research. And it belonged to a woman, because apparently after doing our backstory research, like there was mainly in Russia back in World War II, most of the medics on front lines, mm-hmm. like good 90% of them were all women. So we found out a lot about researching those items. And they were very young. A lot of them were in their early 20s. And they're being thrusted in the middle of battlefield, and they're out there trying to save these men on the field. And they're basically, I mean, sacrificing their lives to save these big grown guys. And there's videos and footage and stuff like that of guys getting, carried out by these women. I mean, just what a testament to the women of that time, you know, like stepping up in that situation. But we started kind of like anything else, right? Like some weird stuff started happening. We were hearing noises, and it was in the room where these items were. And I think just like anything else you say in life, you just kind of chalk it up as, that's odd. You don't think anything of it. The last thing you ever want to think in anything and what we do and what we try to explain to people is not everything is paranormal. You always want to look for a just reason or a just cause for something. I think that's unfortunately with the you know, dawning of social media now and everybody wanting to get into views and all this stuff. It, you know, I'm just not about that. I could care less if we have 20 people following us or 200,000 people following us. What matters to me is the information and the science and everything that we're putting out there, that it be honest and true. So being that Joshua had some background too, and him and I had already been kind of talking about this, I kind of brought it to his attention. I was like, you think maybe we got something going on in that room? Because there's just so many things that just don't make sense. The unexpected foot noises we're hearing, the knocking noises, just weird stuff, you know, that was happening, and no prior anything that would lead up to that to make you feel that way. Like you can easily placebo effect and tell somebody something's haunted, and then automatically the brain takes over from there. But they're just, everybody kind of had the vibe without ever even talking to each other about it. And so then him and I decided one night to kind of try to just make contact to see if there was something there. And we did, we got some, not a whole lot right away. We didn't get a whole lot, but we got some contact. We used a couple of devices. We had a K2 meter and we had a Mel meter, you know, and we used that to measure the room. We kind of set our base, and kind of went from there to see if we'd get any type of spike in EMF detection. And we were getting consistent hits on both devices, which is very rare. And it's definitely leads to a little bit more validity in what's happening when you're getting two separate devices that are working separately, triggering. And so that kind of led to us wanting to really poke around a little bit more into this. And then we started to poke around, and just like anything else in paranormal, I think once you start opening up that line of communication, right, if there is anything there, spirit related or energy wise or whatever, it can sense that there's something different in the room, or that somebody can understand what's happening. So it starts to interact. And as long as you're respectful and you come in with the right approach, like I'm the biggest advocate for not provoking. I don't agree with going into situations and antagonizing spirits like this is some kind of like a freak show. You come out now and you do something or else, like, that's just not how things work. You got to remember, like, if they are spirits and they, you know, because there's still so many unknowns.
Yeah.
They're still going to have human tendencies in some ways. So it's like, you know, how would you like it if somebody came at you in a very aggressive manner demanding things of you? It's not going to work out very well for you. And I feel like we've gotten a lot in just being nice and respectful and trying to have an understanding. And so we started that deal, the kind of investigation. And then I think whatever was there decided it was time to make contact or wanted to be known, because we didn't have a lot of luck initially when we were doing things in English. It wasn't until we started doing research and figured out these items weren't these weren't United States items. They were from Russia, that we decided to try speaking to it using a Russian translator. And when we started doing Russian translator, we started to get hit. One of our most compelling pieces of evidence that actually we've ever documented and caught was the flashlight movement. We had set up some flashlights in the middle of the room, completely away from it. And we had placed the medical bag and some of the items in the middle of the room. And I started playing the translator and asking in Russian if there was any Russian medics or anybody from the Russian Federation that was there from World War II, if they could help us by acknowledging, by making either a flashlight blink or a flashlight move. And almost within a matter of 20 minutes of the investigation starting, we started to get some kind of manipulation with the flashlights on the floor, which nobody has. And I have documentation of that, which is pretty cool footage to watch, where flashlights are blinking and changing on their own. I have a really good piece of evidence where we were zoomed in close on it. No hands are near it. And you can literally hear the flashlight click and see it actually react in front of the camera, which is insane. But the most compelling piece was when we asked it directly to move something. It scared the living Jesus out of you and me when it happened. It literally moved the entire flashlight a good inch and a half to the left. And we were in a pitch dark room when it happened. But the infrared cameras caught it, and you'll see the flashlight on the wall just completely move. And Joshua and I are standing there still. I couldn't process what had just happened. I kind of looked at you. You looked at me for about 10 seconds. There was a long stare. Yeah. And then it was like, did that flashlight just move? It was like yesterday. I'll never forget it. That's like one of the holy grails, right? Like if you're into paranormal, you know, poltergeist, that kind of type of stuff. When you can capture something that compelling, it is pretty crazy to get that. And I told him right then and there, I was like, we have something here that really wants to communicate. And it wouldn't have gone through all this trouble to do that if we hadn't. So we just kind of kept going. We said, we'll be willing to work with you. We set our guidelines on what the expectation was. You said you're not allowed to do anything or any harm to anyone, but if you want your story told, or if you want just to be heard, or if you just want to be acknowledged, we'll give you that outlet to do it. And I think because of that initial connection that was made and how we approached it, immediately after that, we then had probably the most compelling piece of evidence we've ever had, which is a 22-minute documentation of a spirit that never left, manipulating two separate devices, and to the point where it was using one device to acknowledge our response. And then when we would ask it to manipulate a Melmeter, we would tell it to go to a certain number, because we understand that Melmeters will fluctuate. It's really hard to keep a Melmeter set. If you watch any investigation, those Melmeters, it's almost impossible to get them to stay at a certain number for a period of time, because that's not how the device is designed to work. It just registers when there's some type of interference, unless you get it close to something, and even then it's going to fluctuate. So we started off with asking if it was present to come close. It started doing so. Both devices started activating on their own separately, which is really good documentation. And then things got really crazy. The Melmeter started to kind of rise. It was like 1.2, 3.3. So we're like, okay, this thing is close. It wants to talk. It wants to interact. So we started instructing it to do different things, but now we're doing it in English. And it's responding. So then I told him, I was like, okay, this is different. This is not the same spirit, because it's interacting to us and we're speaking to it in English now. And this thing is really going at it. And we got this thing documented on camera, changing the Melmeter to specific numbers that we requested. So like we would say, you're too high. Can you take this down to a 3.0? And it'd be at like a 5.3, 5.4. And then I would ask the request and you'd see it pause, and then it would bang. It would hit the number on the dot. I had asked it to take this device as high as it can possibly go. And we got this thing to get up to like, what was it, like in the 50s, 60s, the temperature raised to 137 degrees on the Melmeter.
And it didn't feel that hot in there either.
Yeah, it was like 80 degrees in the room, if that. And it rose all the way to 137 degrees on cue. And then when we said, okay, you're too high, you're too high, I suggested, let's try something else, because somebody would easily be like, okay, well, that could be maybe explained by something. Right? Everybody's going to have their opinions. I said, can you do me a favor? Can you make this go back down to like zero? And while it was climbing, it literally snapped and went to zero almost instantaneously. There's an area of road out here called Spook Road. And like anything else, I think every city and every town that I know of has something like this. I mean, you could do research. There's always the spooky road. And our objective was to prove that it's just literally folklore and just urban legend and just years of people making up stories about this road. And yes, there's some history on it that we've documented. There was some lynching that was done back in the very, very olden days. But we also found out that it was like early settlement, pioneer territory from the early 1700s. Mm-hmm. So there is a lot of history to that road and those rivers and the rocks and everything in that land. but still didn't think it was anything like what we had come to experience there. But there was documented stuff that we found out about the cemetery at the end of this road, having kind of had calls out there for cult activity, people coming out to the cemetery and doing probably satanic or any type of rituals out in the cemetery, because it is literally in the middle of nowhere. Yep. And it's a very old pioneer. There's tombstones in there from the 1700s, 1800s. And there's one unmarked grave that supposedly is like a hot spot. But once again, is it real? Is it urban legend? So we kind of went out there. And yeah, no, it's definitely not urban legend for real. It was probably one of the most intense investigations. That's the one that I documented. We actually had a growl that we caught on EVP right when I was telling whatever was there that it didn't have permission to control this area and have this soul. But it was a very territorial entity that was in that area. And I don't know exactly what was done there. That's the downside to the research. You can't really find out what exactly was done by these people.
They had an old pioneer house out there, and we were walking back to the car, and we heard people cheering and clapping out
in something in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, just out in the trees somewhere, and you can just hear it from the distance from the parking lot.
That's how this all started. So he wasn't there for that investigation. It was one of our most intense investigations we ever had. He was bummed out that he wasn't there, so he wanted to go check it out. And so we took him out there and let him go experience it firsthand. We let him kind of go out there on his own to kind of experience it with at a safe distance. And whatever I made contact with there at that cemetery almost immediately recognized we returned, because he left the car. We stayed, we turned off the car, and just had had the auxiliary stuff on, and we're kind of just keeping watch on him in the cemetery.
Logan and I were sitting in the back seat.
Yep.
And we were just talking, and I was like, you know what would be crazy? If this car just started going off right now. You know how scary that would be?
Did you say that?
Yeah.
And my car starts malfunctioning. Like, everything in my lights start going off in my car. My alarm starts going off. My lights, my hat, like, I don't, like, we went into a panic. Let's just be honest. We went into a flat-out panic. Joshua comes running because he thinks we're trying to send him, like, a code signal, like, we need to go. I didn't feel right, so I quick did a cleanse of the car, and basically Joshua and everything and all of us, is I just didn't feel right. I felt something recognized we were back, and it was making itself known to us again, and it kind of never stopped from there. It followed us, I feel like. So Randonautica is an app that came out. You guys can do your research. I encourage your listeners and viewers, I'll be to look at it as well, just for research purposes, so they understand where we're coming from this. Because, Albie, if you do your research, you'll find out this app has already found dead bodies. Mm. It's been on the news. There was the kids most recently in California. They had set their intention as death, being stupid, just thinking it'd be funny. And they ended up at a pier, and they found a black briefcase or a suitcase that was at the pier in the rocks. And they jumped off the railing to go down there to go inspect it, because it was right where the pinpoint had kind of set for their manifestation, opened up the bag, and there was two chopped up bodies in there. And they were for two missing tourists that gone missing in California, and their bodies were located. And then it happened again in Seattle at another location where somebody had set death. Now, granted, the death per se didn't happen because of their manifestation, but they found that because of it. And so then Connor and the app, they had to go public and make an announcement to tell people to stop using the app in that way. Like, granted, we appreciate that it's helped bring closures for families, for the, you know, their children and their loved ones, but we don't want, that's not what we encourage this app to do. We don't want it to be used in that way. And so there's too much behind that. That's kind of what led me to investigate this app. You know, I don't know exactly what's going on with this app and the creators of it and what they're tapping into and how they're figuring all this out and how they're using technology to kind of push that to people and teaching them about manifestation. And we understand that how manifestation works. It's just like anything else, right? You believe in something hard enough and you work towards it, it happens. You want something bad enough, you can make it happen. And so that's kind of the point of manifestation. You believe in it, you manifest it, and then the world can present it to you in its own way. It uses quantum randomness in connection with manifestation to generate points using an app. which sounds stupid because I'm not a big app guy. I'm not really big into apps. I think apps are a bunch of jokes. A lot of people are using those apps out there claiming this and that, whatever. I'm not really a big fan of that. But this is different.
Yeah.
The guy's name is Connor. He owns the app. He's a very interesting individual. And he came up with this quantum randomness. He uses some computers that are based in different parts of the country to come up with these quantum random points. And you're supposed to focus your manifestation on what you want. You use the app and then it generates pinpoint locations around your area for that manifestation to occur. And I was like, I told you guys, I was like, we're going to do this for the show just to kind of, it was more of a debunk thing for me because people are like, oh, I downloaded that new ghost app. And I was looking in my room and it was there. I was like, yeah, okay, well, that's not really like a valid thing. It literally says on the deal for entertainment purposes only. I was like, let's just try it. Let's see what happens. And we had an idea to use the app to see if it would generate hotspots for us where we could find paranormal activity. And I contacted Randonautica and told them my intentions of the app and that I would do nothing to make the app look bad, but that this was my plan. And yeah, so then we started our kind of a deal on the app. And the very first location, I, for the validity of the show and for the validity of the science and what we're doing, I did no cuts. I wrote down my intention without letting anybody see it. I sealed it in an envelope, Albie, and I wrote my name on it. And then I proceeded to use the app so I could show the viewers, this is what the app, this is how you use it. And this is my intention. And we're going to go ahead and see if this app is legit or if it's not. And we're going to find out right now. And I'm going to expose it for everybody here to see. And I set my intention to be a old white farmhouse with talkative spirits. And that was my intention. I wrote it down. Didn't tell anybody. I hit the app. And where did it take us? To some abandoned road, way out of town. And the first thing we see when we get to the point is an old white barn house. And I immediately got the chills almost instantaneously because the only person that knew this was me. And at this point, and I'm telling these guys, I'm freaking out. And they're like, why? And I'm like, guys, you're not going to believe this. And they're like, no way. No way. And I undo the envelope on the show and you'll see it because it's going to be uncut and raw footage. And I open it up and it's literally exactly what I just described. And the thing about it is that for the sake of the app and for the sake of the validity of the science, I did not speak my intention out loud so that in case the app was listening, like I kept it completely secret and private so that there's no possible way whatsoever. Even if somebody I would want somebody to critique it, explain to me how that's possible. That was the idea, the point of it. And so then I was like, all right, well, it took us here. Let's find out if this thing works. And I just finished building our spirit portal box. So it's just it's an ITC enhancer. It just helps with the chit-chat that you hear from the static that comes out of an SP7 spirit box. And you can amplify the sounds and stuff. So anyways, we deploy that in front of this house. And almost instantaneously, we start getting this old woman and an old man. And you could tell they're just older spirits speaking to us. And then there was that little boy that asked, was definitive, clear as day, who is that, Daddy? I mean, there was like three or four different spirits that were interacting with us at this house. And I have this all documented live, like they're uncut. It was insane. And I was like, okay, that's ridiculous. And then I was like, maybe we just got lucky, one off thing. And we proceed to shoot the rest of the episodes and do each one of us did our own thing exactly identical. And man, it was ridiculous. Like every single one of us was almost right on point. What are the odds of that happening? Like five different people, five different intentions, kept private, uncut, and documented video of this happening. And about when this started happening, we were going live on TikTok doing this. And all of a sudden, Connor and the team from Randonautica followed our page and started commenting and were watching us very closely because what we were doing was blowing their mind. And they contacted us literally. Yeah. We're like, we're going to be watching you guys very closely because this is very interesting for the science of their app. And it was incredible when we had their support because they knew we were being legit. We weren't trying to be like some of these YouTubers that are faking the stuff. Like we were being 100% authentic with the audience, letting them see it good or bad, even if it failed. We weren't going to sugarcoat anything, which is kind of what we've been doing since we started. And then it was going great until your situation. Until your intention.
We all took turns and me and Jonathan were the last two. I was second to last. He was last. And I don't remember what my...
You said an abandoned road not near people.
Yeah, something like that.
Because you want to know...
I want to make sure it was legal to be there, that we weren't going to have people come up to our car and ask, what are you doing?
He set that intention. We had a really good
We had so interaction. Many spirits come through, and we suddenly started hearing these, like, gates.
Picture Albie like a big, huge, large gate, you know, that kind of creaking hinge noise, like when a gate opens initially, two metal doors. We got that clear as day that came through at two separate spots on this trip, both of when we had prayed that if there was any lost spirits that we had made contact with, if they could, please follow the light. And I just said, you know, if there's a forgiving God, there's these spirits here that need help, and they're lost, and they'd love to come home, and if you see fit, can you help them find their way? And then all of a sudden things got really weird, right? And then it happened at that second location because we were so amped up from the first one. We were like, let's do that again.
Yeah.
And I think that's what got us in trouble, Albie, because one thing I've learned in this is there's a difference between investigating and wanting to learn more about the science and documenting it and giving spirits an opportunity to be heard. It's another thing when you start trying to interfere into things that are not your responsibility or not things you should be doing, right? Like trying to cross over souls, trying to do God's work or you know, things that are just not meant for us as individuals to be messing with, right? So I think whatever that did, it caused what happened to you that night, because it went from positive, everything was going great, to we walked into a trap and our generosity was turned around and used against us.
As we were getting back in the car from that location, from that second to last location, we kept having a couple of people say there was something around us, like in the back seat with Parker and Logan, because they were in the back seat.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that same person was also saying something about a little girl. So like, there's a little girl trapped. We weren't even at this last location yet. So we started driving to this last location.
It was the complete opposite end of where we were.
Yeah. So we finally get there. At this point, it's like dark out, like pitch black. It's weird because it was like...
No, it was a light, and then we went to the other side, and it was dark, pitch black.
Yeah.
Which, thinking about that now, is...
There was some empaths that had joined the live.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm pretty sensitive to that. I listen to those people to some extent because I know that it's really hard to sort through an empath in somebody that's just being dumb. But we did get some serious warnings from people.
I kept seeing people warning about me that something was going to happen to me.
Before it even happened.
Yeah. And so we get to that location.
I had already wrote my intention.
Yep.
So I had wrote down a lost child spirit by the name of Alice, because I wanted to be very specific, Albie, on this one. Like, to the point where let's test this thing and see just how accurate can it be. I try to make it as precise and as pinpoint as possible. And then I sealed it and we went on, and I never said it to anybody. And it was while we were in route that the guy mentioned about a little girl. And I started to remember, I acknowledged him and I said, it's funny you just said that. Let's just wait and see when we get to the location. I'll reveal my intention. But it's funny, remember, and I had you write that guy's name down. When we get there, I'm going to announce his name and be like, you said you had a feeling about a little girl, which is very interesting. And then we get to the location and immediately, it just didn't already feel right. I think we can all concur.
Yeah.
We got to that spot, and it's something just felt off about it.
We didn't even get out of the car.
Yeah, we just didn't feel right about it. And then the warnings started coming in right away to be extremely careful, that they said this is not a good place. There was empaths coming through saying, you guys are in danger. You need to get out of there. So we got to that point and started making contact. And this one voice, Albie, and it's clear as day. It's like burning in my mind. Remember? It was like a, just a faint. And then we started getting that little faint girl's voice that was calling out.
On a previous investigation, I used meditative practice, and we got things coming through reacting to what I was doing. When I was hearing this little girl voice and having the idea that something was happening to her that shouldn't be, I was very suddenly protective of this spirit and thought that maybe the best course of action is to go into some meditative state and try and be hero, essentially. As soon as I started going into that, I don't remember much. I sit there breathing, doing the whole breath work, getting into it, and then I finally start seeing this environment, and it's dark. It was like this dark, giant space.
We both have been practicing, so we both kind of went our own separate way of doing it.
And I remember kind of like calling out, seeing what there was, and suddenly there was this little girl. And the weird thing is that she's like the little girl that you would like see in your head, like a stereotypical little girl, like
a stereotypical, what you would expect, I guess.
Yeah, like cliche. Yeah,
very cliche. Which should have been a dead giveaway right away.
But I was more concerned with trying to get her out then. Anyway, I'm asking her, like, I'm saying, hey, I'm here to help. There's no reason to be afraid of me. I'm here to help you. And one big thing that I noticed that I should have known immediately to stop was that there was no discernible face there. I couldn't see what her face looked like. I knew what she was wearing and stuff, but, like, she had no face, essentially. It was weird. And I was like, here, like, take my hand.
That's where things went wrong.
Yep. And as soon as, like, we made contact,
you snapped out of it.
The best way I could probably describe it is after you come out of surgery and they give you all the pain meds and you're just kind of laying there like
lethargic.
Yeah.
I said, this isn't right. I don't think we should be here. I think there's something wrong.
Do you want to describe what you saw when you were in there? Because you said you were also there.
I had the same pretty much almost identical feeling that you had, just a little subtle differences. Like mine wasn't the girl. I just saw a light.
Yeah.
And I kept hearing her voice and trying to go towards the light. But the closer I got to the light, the more uneasy my mind I was starting to feel about the situation, that something wasn't right. You went towards it. I went away from it. And then I was like, this isn't our fight. This is not right. We need to get out of here. You pressed forward. Because when you came back, I was already kind of like detoxing from what had just happened. You kind of came out of whatever meditative state you were in. And then all of a sudden you just had like the biggest shark eyes I've ever seen in my life. Like as if you were staring right through me like I didn't even exist. And I turned and looked at these two in the back of the car instantaneously and gave them the look of like, I'm not okay with him being up in the front seat right now. Something is not right.
We were experiencing what was happening around them as this was they occurring. Were doing that.
Yeah.
So Logan, you had a K2 and the camera. And while we were sitting in the back, we were just trying to see if there was anything happening. So he turned on the K2, kind of moving it around. He moves it right in between Jonathan and Joshua.
Like right
and it
on starts the center console there.
And it starts going off immediately. So he pulls it back and it goes off. Puts it back there, it starts going off again. And so we start to talk about that. We were like, that's kind of weird. I mean, we don't know what they're going through. And
yeah, because
I mean,
quiet.
What's going on
there
around
was no talking. It was just quiet.
And while that was happening, we both at the same time started to feel eyes around the car. Like every angle, every point that we looked at, we felt like there was a pair of eyes staring right back.
Yeah.
And there was one point that we both at the same exact time looked out the passenger side window because we felt like there was just a face sitting right there staring back at us. Both at the same time, we didn't say anything. We just both turned at the same time. We just didn't know what was going on. I mean, yeah. Logan,
you can see it. I don't know. It won't make the cut because we were holding the cameras, obviously. But if you were on the live, you could see us like we were bugging out in the back, like no other way to put it. You could see us, our eyes were, heads were shooting back and forth because, you know, there was mixing energies. Like you could feel.
Yeah,
like,
there was something.
You can start to feel the tension just.
Yeah, the best way I could describe what was going on between all four of us right in the middle seat, right there where I put the K2, was just a black hole that just sucked everything in that it possibly could. If it got the chance to, we would bring it in. And, like, you could honestly, like, feel it. Like, it wasn't a shape. There wasn't a person. It was just an energy there. You know what I'm saying? Like, you couldn't describe it with a word. It was just there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, then he comes out of it. And initially, I started asking him questions, and you weren't responding at all.
I remember.
You were, like, just dead to the wind.
Yeah, I remember sitting there at one point, and Jonathan's like, I've had enough of this. Like, he starts pulling out some of his other equipment. He pulls out a rosary. And I remember suddenly the second he pulled it out and it's in his hand, my eyes just dart directly to it. And the corner of my mouth went into this like sneer. Like, what is that? I'm just looking at something that I don't want to see.
Do you remember how aggressive he started getting?
Yes, he was yelling.
He like, you were like getting extremely aggressive at everything. Like your anger went up through the roof.
He had this urge to get out of the car.
Yeah, you kept wanting to get out of the car for whatever reason. Like, you kept wanting to get out of the car. We kept telling you to get back in the car. We were leaving.
Jonathan immediately, like, he shut it down. He's like, no one's getting out of this car.
But me. We have our cleansing stuff in a separate deal. These things could get really intense, and that's part of preparation and part of all the research and everything you do before you get into this stuff. This is crap they don't tell you on TV, right? Like, this is the stuff. It all looks like glitz and glam, and, you know, production work makes everything look so cool, but the reality of it is 9 times out of 10, you're never going to even come in contact with something. But then there is that chance that you might, and what are you going to do when it does happen? Right? It's all fun and games to talk to spirits and have things happen and all that fun stuff. But what happens if you encounter something that you weren't anticipating?
We were not.
And so I had done a lot of stuff prior to this. I have a lot of religious stuff that has happened in my family. You know, I'm open about the fact that I had a situation happen when I was younger that I believe was a slight possession that happened. And my mother's a very religious person. I come from a very religious household. But anyways, that none of that matters. What matters is that we cleanse the car. I did a cleansing prayer and a little bit of a cleansing ritual on everybody to try to help alleviate this negative energy that was engulfing us, like you put it. Literally, you never explained it like that, but that's legitimately what it felt like. You're right. It was like a black hole. It was just sucking all of it in. You're right. That's exactly what it felt like. And then I thought we were all good because we all felt good.
Oh, yeah. I still felt,
but you didn't. I still you felt did not. Just, you did not allow this cleansing to help or work, or you were fighting it the entire time.
And so we start driving away, right? Because we think, oh, we're good. And
we cut the live after that.
Yeah, we did. We cut it because it wasn't about that anymore. It was just us about.
Well, I was worried about. I was worried getting you home because I told them, I was like, he's not right in the head. Something's wrong. We need to get him back to the house or something.
We're driving. Logan pulls up on his phone how to get back.
We had no idea where we are at this point, right? So we put in head back to his house, which was not that far. I knew where we were.
10 minutes, relatively. 12 minutes from the house, yeah.
Put in his address on our phone and said, you're on the right road. Just head straight. You're literally on this road. We knew exactly what road we were on, according to Google Maps.
Correct.
We kept driving, and we realized that it's not the road that the Google Maps says it is.
Correct. That was the crazy thing. Like the app glitch. Like, it had us on the road to the left, like the road before the road we were on.
Yeah. I recognized that fence. I recognized the streetlight. I recognized the gate and, like, the actual entrance for the cemetery. And I was like, guys, we're driving on Spook Road right now.
We were literally at the cemetery at Spook Road. And then we all realized where we were. Yep. We started freaking out.
So I was still in my little state I was in. And as soon as we hit Spook Road, and it was either I knew immediately or I started to realize that, okay, maybe something's not right here. Maybe it's not just me being in fatigue. And then I started trying to process it, think about it. And I felt something else, like, trying to, like, override that. It felt like someone else's thoughts. A little bit. And then all of a sudden I felt like there was something watching over us.
The symbolic sign for the Randonautica app is an owl. And some people who have done the app have mentioned that when they do their manifestations, they end up at a location and an owl is seen. And even Connor and Amy, they had acknowledged that the owl has symbolically popped up periodically for certain people. And on our way home down that road, as all this is occurring, remember that owl?
Yeah.
It was on the side of the road as we were driving past it. It sees us, flies up in the air, flies in front of my car and then out in front of it, and then flies right next to us for about a good probably minute and a half down that road and then went off. And I about freaked.
Yeah.
Because I said, was that an owl? That was an owl. And I'm like, the whole thing with Randonautica is the owl. Like, why would there, like, I get it. It's night. It's an it woman. But it just, that moment, that exact thing with what we were doing with that app and that, like, everything that was happening with you. And then that, it was like, there's no way that's a coincidence. Like, that was just, if everything that had been happening that day, there's no way that was a coincidence. So it really led me to question, what exactly is going on with this app?
We were driving. I was in my little state, and he was describing what he saw in the void.
It was Jonathan basically describing what he saw in that darkness, that void. He was describing that to Logan and I.
Yep.
And that's when Joshua pitched in because he's like,
I turned to him, and apparently I'd snapped. and said, "I know, I was there." Everyone went quiet.
The whole car went quiet.
Yeah.
Like, what is your problem, dude?
You looked at me and just terror. There was nothing.
And what scared us the most, too, about Joshua and, like, how he was acting was his movement. So his movement was very, very slow.
Very slow.
His head movement, whenever he'd need to look at Jonathan, since they were just right next to each other, he would just turn very, very slow.
Without blinking.
Say a few words.
No blinking, no nothing. Just...
And then turn back. But when this came about, and when he said, "I know," his head just
snapped.
And that's what scared Jonathan the most, because he thought we were going to be going off the road. Like,
yeah, I was afraid he was going to attack me while we're in the middle of driving. That was what I was worried about more than anything else, because you were very angry. I felt threatened. I felt you were going to literally reach over and try to attack me, because you just would not stop staring at me. And it was like there was intention there. Then I could feel that energy. And I was not comfortable with it. And I looked at you guys and I was like, "We need to get him home now." Yeah. I just wanted to get us home because I didn't feel safe in the car.
Yeah.
With him, with driving and him being in the front seat. And I didn't want to get him out of the car and move him to the back seat.
Right.
So I was like, "Let's just hurry up and get him home."
We just felt that tension the rest of the ride back. And that
it was very quiet.
Right. So, like, fast forward, we get back to the house safely. And then you did a prayer.
Yep. I did a cleansing prayer.
We saged again.
Mm-hmm. Big time.
Jonathan used a St. Michael prayer.
Yes.
Protection prayer.
You guys said that you all were feeling hands on your shoulders.
Mm-hmm. So I remember feeling it. And
the thing about it was, is we were all feeling it, but never said anything.
Well, I mentioned it because I wanted to know if you guys felt that same exact thing.
Right.
So I felt a hand on my right shoulder during that entire prayer. Mm-hmm. And when we were done with the prayer, I guess you saged,
mm-hmm.
and then when that was all done, I asked if you guys felt anything during the prayer. Logan said, "Yeah, I did. I felt that same exact thing." I was like, "Okay, what shoulder did you feel it on?" And both of them at the same time, right shoulder.
Yep.
And that, it just boggled my mind, like, that we all felt the same thing. And then Joshua was like, I didn't feel anything.
And it was at that point, Albie, I realized that what we had done had helped us and relieve the energy in the room, in the car, not the room, but in the car. Mm-hmm. And the three of us had felt a lot better, like a weight had been lifted. But you still were like dead solid staring. And I was like, okay, this did
not work. Well, he did say that he felt a little bit of something, but it wasn't enough.
It was, He started almost begging me to help. Like,
because I was trying to fight with whatever it was. I was trying... You know, after I fully realized what was going on, and I had said, "We need to do like an actual cleansing, like get me out of the car." Yeah. We need to.
So then I got out, got my holy water. I got my grandfather's rosary, which is a very special piece to me. My grandfather was a very religious man, and you know, he had his ups and downs with everything in life, but he lived his life a very righteous way. And I have a lot of respect for my grandfather. God rest his soul. And my mother had given me this and said, "If you ever find yourself in a situation, you keep this nearby you." And so I begged and pleaded and asked for help, because I said, I don't, at this point, this is beyond me. I opened myself up and I said, "God, there's something that has grabbed onto him. I can't do this without you. I release any responsibility on my end. I give this to you."
So Joshua was standing there, Jonathan right in front of him. You're just like, "Somebody needs to be in front of me. Someone needs to be behind me. I feel like I'm going to fall if something actually releases here."
Jonathan says, "Somebody get ready to catch him."
He went up to Joshua's forehead and said, "Whatever is attached to Joshua, I need you to release." And pushed his hand on Joshua's forehead. That was when you fell back, because I was holding you and you just started to like get angry almost. Yeah. And you were fighting. But the part that happened with me, when he fell back, he fell back. I caught him. My arm wrapped around him to where my hand was on his chest. And I felt his heart stop for about a second or two. And then it started beating again. And that was the part where it scared me the most. I looked at Logan. Logan looked at me like we had no idea what was going on.
And then the dogs.
Then the dogs started. That was after, though.
Yeah.
That was after everything was done. Yeah. But Joshua was fighting. And he was getting angry. And then Jonathan finished up the prayer. That's when Joshua just dropped to the ground. I let him go. That way he can just relax, catch his breath. And I mean, we could tell that we got him back.
The whole time this is happening, it's just quiet mm-hmm. in the neighborhood. And as soon as this happened and after everything was released, and then all of a sudden all the dogs in the neighborhood just started barking like crazy.
It was a defensive bark, like
protecting the house.
Yeah, pretty yeah. much.
And so I'm there just catching my breath.
You looked at Jonathan and you said, thank you. And Jonathan's like, no, don't thank me. Thank him. I guess after that, that's when you handed Joshua your grandfather's rosary.
Yeah.
But I definitely believe whatever attached to you is definitely not good. And I definitely believe yeah. that was a demonic.
No.
The very demonic, a very, very mild, I would say a mild.
Yeah,
demonic possession. It wasn't a. There's way worse.
Yeah.
There's way worse that has been documented than that. That was just a small case of what can and will happen when you get involved in this kind of stuff if you're not careful.
Yep. Right. It was our first ever experience
of that severity.
We had something that didn't go our way.
I think what happens, Albie, is you see a lot of these guys have been doing it for 20, 30 years, and you kind of get complacent and you figure like, you know, you go into every situation and you kind of like anything else, you think you've seen it all or you're prepared for it. And then we prep weeks out before investigations, I guess, to kind of help the podcast here. We prep, we don't just go into stuff blindly for the exception of Hauntotica, which is exactly why we don't do that kind of crap because you don't know what you're going to get yourself involved when you didn't do any history on the land. You didn't do any history on anything. You didn't pull anything up that could give you any type of validity to give you strength and ammunition against what you're about to go into. You're just going into it blindly. And that is a very dangerous thing to do. That's one of my biggest advices, is to make sure you're mentally preparing for that kind of stuff. Don't just go into anything blindly.
Do you want to try to scare me? If you've had or have heard about a paranormal experience you'd like to share, or if the area you live in has a particularly scary legend or lore, I want to hear it. Send an email to scareme@albirobles.com. Scare Me is produced by Albie Robles Voice and features original music by Adam Clifton. Additional sound bits are provided by Stephen D. Voiceovers. You can follow us on social media. We are Scare Me Pod on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. For voiceover booking information, or to inquire about having your own podcast produced, go to www.albirobles.com.